All we claim is on the air.
Here's the snap.
Drops back. Throws the ball.
The long ball. Downfield. Pass is tipped and it is intercepted.
Down the lane. Breaks the tackle. He's still going. 50. 45.
40. 30.
He's going to go all the way.
Runs left to the 20. To the 10. To the 5.
And he strikes into the end zone.
Touchdown.
Touchdown.
Touchdown. Touchdown.
This is Wayne Larrabee with USA Today's Arthur Arkush. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly, an in-depth look at professional football this week. In the spotlight game, two of the hottest teams in the league, the Carolina Panthers at the San Francisco 49ers.
We'll also take a look at the disaster that's going on in Miami right now, as well as the future of Gary Kubiak in Houston and the Denver Broncos without their head coach, John Fox.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee on Pro Football Weekly, and the way we hear it features news and information from around the NFL. Arthur Arkush is in studio this week for Hub, who's on the phone and on the road. We start with the Miami story, fellas, and what a week on the Dolphins' offensive line. First off, Jonathan Martin, bully issue involving Richie Incognito continues to spin daily. Martin left the team last week. The Dolphins suspended Incognito indefinitely for conduct detrimental to the team. And so, Arthur, they're down a couple of starters on that offensive line heading into Monday night's game at Tampa.
Yeah, they sure are. It's an offensive line that really wasn't playing well. It's not really the main story here, but Ryan Tannehill was just off the record pace for being sacked in a season. So they've got all kinds of issues. Of course, the main one here is off the field, and it's a complex issue. We were just talking off the air about how there really is a lot of layers. This is a very fluid situation. So, you know, my take is the story continues to develop is simply that no one deserves to be treated like that. You mentioned it's a bullying case. There is some pretty crude text messages, voicemails that have seeped into the media between Richie Incognito, not so much between, but from Incognito to Martin. And again, it's a fluid situation. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves as the story continues to elevate or escalate. But the one thing I can say is that Joe Philbin, Jeff Ireland, allowing an atmosphere, a workplace like this, to me, is just completely inexcusable. And we'll see what turns out to be the case. The Dolphins said that they suspended Incognito immediately. And then what happens, all of his teammates come to his defense. So it just seems to me that there is a lot of people going in a lot of different directions in the Miami organization. And it really is just a total mess right now.
Hub, when you take a look at a situation like this, obviously there's more to it. The Dolphins suspending Incognito, obviously there was outside pressure to do that. That was a politically correct thing to do, and et cetera, even though within the confines of that locker room, maybe it wasn't.
You know, Wayne, I didn't know if I was going to be the first one to use that phrase, politically correct, because what everybody needs to do, and I'm talking about fans and even more importantly media on this particular story, is we need to take a step back and wait until all the facts come out, because there was an immediate rush to judgment that this is a bullying situation and that certainly Martin's the victim and that Incognito is the villain. And it turns out, as information has begun to seep out, that that is not clear at all. This is certainly a case of hazing having gone way too far, but hazing and bullying can be two very different things. We don't know what the level of involvement was from management, the coaching staff, in terms of a desire for veteran teammates to help this kid become a better player and maybe choosing bad tactics to do it. But what's really been fascinating to me is just in the week or so this has all been unfolding is that we have found out that so much about these, quote, texts and voicemails is being released out of context. But it turns out that there are tales on some of those voicemails that make it clear that maybe it wasn't bullying so much as just, you know, inappropriate language and discussion. So I'm not choosing sides. I'm not saying that Incognito is innocent. I find that hard to believe looking at his track record. But it's pretty clear that Martin is culpable in some areas here, too. And I don't think it's just a question of all these veteran players, not only on the Dolphins, but around the league coming out to protect their culture and to protect their locker room. They really feel that in this case, Incognito may be getting a bad deal. And that's why I think it's very important to make sure that we know everything before we start forming final conclusions and opinions on just exactly who's right and who's wrong here.
Yeah, and again, you know, we start talking about also, you know, and Arthur, I think you brought up a good point, the workplace. I mean, Jeff Ireland, the general manager, Joe Philbin, the head coach, the offense coordinator, Mike Sherman, how could something like this escalate to this point? Obviously, they didn't think it was as big a problem as it has become.
You're absolutely right. But you know what? As the head coach of that football organization, he has to have his finger on the pulse of everything that's going on. You know, one other thing that just has kind of been bugging me about this whole story is all the macho guys who say that Jonathan Martin needed to step up and deck Richie Incognito. And I just think that that's the wrong message to be sending here. I think this could turn out to say more, to be a bigger issue than just football. And to me, anyway, I just think that that's absolutely wrong, and it's not the way to solve things. And you know, there's some suggestion that, like I said, maybe Joe Philbin was encouraging Richie Incognito to try and toughen up Jonathan Martin. So, again, a lot of things still need to come to light here, but it's just an ugly situation and really no good way to sugarcoat it, obviously.
And, Hub, one last layer on this story. It's obvious now that this is out of the control of the football people of the Miami Dolphins. It appears to me now the league is involved. The media is involved. Society is involved in it. It's well beyond the control of the coaches and players, it appears to me.
Well, it absolutely is. And one of the things that the entire Dolphin organization seems to be so upset about, mostly these veteran players, is that that is Martin's fault. He's the one that took it out of house before, according to all of them, they even knew that it was a problem in-house. Again, I'm just reporting here. I'm not saying I support that position. But that's certainly what the people in the Dolphins organization are feeling right now. And just very quickly, guys, and it's the least important part of the story, but it is an interesting note. Football-wise, the last time the Miami Dolphins were on the football field a week ago Thursday night, they got a win. Jonathan Martin was gone. He had left the team. Richie Incognito left the game early with a stinger in his shoulder, and the offensive line played its best game of the season without the two of them in the lineup.
We'll be back with more Way We Hear It when your current edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the editor, Hub Arkush, with news and notes the way we hear it from across the NFL. And with us in studio this week is Arthur Arkush. Hub is on the road. And Arthur, you know, two receivers, one's coming and one's going, involving stories this week. Percy Harvin's been back at practice for the Seattle Seahawks, and it'll be interesting to see if and when he is elevated the playing status. Meanwhile, at Jacksonville, their former first-round draft choice wide receiver Justin Blackmon has been suspended indefinitely by the NFL for violation of the league's drug policy.
Yeah, that's right. Just, you know, discussing Percy Harvin first, just a unique, dynamic talent. We've seen what the Seahawks have been able to do without him. It's going to be really exciting for them to add him into the mix, assuming he is like his former self, coming off the hip injury. You know, we just saw Sidney Rice go down with Seattle. We've seen, as well as they have played, at least in wins and losses, they've really actually struggled in the past few weeks, so I do expect him to give them a real shot in the arm for sure. Again, assuming he's healthy, they don't feel the need to rush him. They've been getting enough wins without him, but the time is coming soon. As far as Justin Blackmon goes, it's just a sad story. Former first-round pick, had seemingly everything in front of him. He is now going to be suspended, is already suspended for the rest of the season, and his career is in real jeopardy at this point. He really needs to get it turned around. He's the one thing the Jaguars organization has going for it, and like I said, it's just a sad story, a cautionary tale if you look at some of the other young, bright stars that are now one strike away around the league.
Well, and guys, Justin Blackmon, you look at you know, evidence, if you needed it, of what a complete disaster this organization is, but was when all of the current management, Shad Khan, David Caldwell, Gus Bradley, took over. And this was supposed to be one of the few remaining assets. And it is exactly as Arthur just said, a tragic story. A young man with everything in front of him. He's got every chance. He's now a three-time loser in the NFL's drug program. And you just hope that he'll get his life together first. And then we can talk about the NFL. As far as Percy Harvin, I'll get burned on this. But according to everybody I talk to, this recovery is slower than what Seattle had hoped. He started practicing a couple weeks ago and early on had some swelling and discomfort, and they had to slow him down. It would be a small miracle if he were available Sunday for Atlanta, and it's no guarantee that he's just a week away. They're trying to be very careful. They want him for the playoffs. They feel pretty comfortable they're going to get there, and they don't want to rush him back and not have him available when money time comes around.
Couple of head coaches, guys, on the mend this week. Let's start with Houston head coach Gary Kubiak. Suffered a minor stroke at halftime of last week's game. But what was his future, Arthur, before the stroke? And what is his future with that franchise now with this health issue? And has it changed?
his future before was very bleak. I hate to say this. And first and foremost, we hope that Gary Kubiak gets healthy as quickly as possible. It was a very, very scary scene on the sideline, not something we see often. So first and foremost, our best to him, one of the classiest guys in the NFL. As far as the product on the field, it has not been good enough. Obviously, Bob McNair has been so patient with that franchise, but this was really a Super Bowl or bust season. Obviously, it has headed in completely the opposite direction. So everything we're hearing is Gary Kubiak could be in major trouble. I'm not so sure that this health scare changes that. I didn't think anything was going to happen in season to begin with, so it's a story that we'll have to keep an eye on.
Well, either it is interesting that you use the phrase classiest guy in the NFL, which is absolutely true, but he's competing with his boss, Bob McNair, in that category. And as you say, McNair has been so patient, but the writing was on the wall. Everybody I talked to said that if they didn't turn this collapse around, and they haven't and they won't, that Kubiak was going to be out. But this leaves the owner in a very precarious position. How do you fire a guy who's been with you for, what, 8-9 years now after he's had this serious illness? Whether it'll be a factor or not, we don't know. But it certainly makes this more complicated for Bob McNair as far as what the future of the coaching job in Houston is.
Meanwhile, in Denver, head coach John Fox had a heart procedure last week. He's out for a while. We're not quite sure how long. Former head coach Jack Del Rio, the defensive coordinator, has been named interim head coach. And, Arthur, will this be a smooth transition, would you expect?
I would think of all the organizations in football that could weather a storm like this, at least in my opinion, the Broncos have to be at the top of the list. You've got Peyton Manning, obviously another coach on the field. And, you know, between guys like Peyton and Champ Bailey, I don't think leadership, a void of leadership, is going to be an issue at all. The interim head coach, Jack Del Rio, spent 9 years down in Jacksonville. Certainly his been around the block as head coach in this league. He made a couple postseason appearances. He didn't do a particularly good job of head coaching down in Jacksonville, but he's got a lot more talent to work with here. Like I said, the offense is going to be in good hands. If he can get that defense going, which has been a struggle thus far, I expect Denver's going to be okay.
Yeah, the one really interesting piece about this, guys, as Arthur says, Del Rio will be fine for the 4 or 5 decisions that have to be made in-game in those 60 minutes. He's got the 9 years' experience. I'm sure he'll get most of them right or at least be comfortable making the calls. And he'll run the defense. He's the defensive coordinator. But offensively, you've got Adam Gase, a very young and up-and-coming offensive coordinator, and Peyton Manning, who tends to run his own show anyway. There's no question who the ultimate decision-maker is when John Fox is on the sideline. But Del Rio has said he's not messing in the offense. And so it'll be fascinating to watch the interplay between Manning and his coach, Gase, and to see if there is any disruption, any confusion, any hesitation in pulling the trigger as they try and go forward without the calming hand and decisive voice of Fox.
You said it, Hub. Peyton runs that ship out there. He's running that offense. Stay tuned. We've got the games coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with USA Today's Arthur Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, the Patriots, Jets, Chiefs, and Browns are all off. The Washington Redskins and Minnesota Vikings got things underway in Minneapolis on Thursday night. Kind of a back and forth, a little bit of a wild ball game, but the Vikings were able to hang on for a victory over the Redskins and a much-needed win for Les Frazier and company in Minneapolis.
Oh, you could say that again, Wayne. I'll tell you what, those two bad football teams playing on Thursday night, but it was a pretty entertaining game, I have to say. You really nailed it, though. Leslie Frazier needed a win desperately, and there were some interesting things to come out of that game for the Vikings. First of all, Christian Ponder actually played quite well before he got knocked out of the game with a separated left shoulder trying to dive for a touchdown late in the fourth quarter. So I thought that has to be a positive takeaway for sure. The resurgence of Kevin Williams on defense, he pretty much put that defense on his shoulders in the second half and willed them to a victory. I thought that was fascinating. And then 2 weeks ago, the Vikings players were grumbling a little bit about a conservative approach when they had a lead against the Cowboys on the final drive. So what did you see last night from Allen Williams and Leslie Frazier? They had zero blitz down by the goal line on the last three plays of the game. They were able to get a goal line stand and hold off the Redskins, and like you said, get a win they really needed.
Yeah, 34-27, Minnesota defeats Washington to get the weekend started on Thursday night. Meanwhile, the winless Jacksonville Jaguars are in Nashville this weekend to meet the 4-4 Tennessee Titans. Titans coming off a brutal stretch, going 0-3 against the likes of Kansas City, Seattle, and San Francisco, three clubs who are arguably three of the top four teams in the league. Their combined record, 22-3. So, you know, at least they stepped down in class a little bit this week in getting Jacksonville.
Yeah, no question about it. And I'll tell you what about the arrival of Chris Johnson? It only took 9 weeks for it to happen, but he finally went off. He looked like the CJ of old. We saw that world-class speed, his ability to make people miss. And I'll tell you what, that's a dangerous team. That defense continues to play well. If CJ, you know, appears to be that guy for the stretch, they get some things going with Jake Locker, that's a team to look out for in the wild card picture.
Buffalo Bills take a 3-6 mark to Pittsburgh, where the 2-6 Steelers are a mere shell of the team that went to the Super Bowl a few short seasons ago. The Bills have played New Orleans and Kansas City tough, Arthur, and this week they get quarterback E.J. Manuel reportedly back from that torn knee ligament. They lost four of the five games he missed.
Yeah, should be a big lift getting Manuel back. I will say, you know, what Doug Marrone has done with the Bills, I know the wins and losses don't show it, but I think what he's done has been really, really impressive. I love just about all the moves he's made. I really, really question having Jeff Toole throw down by the goal line with a three-point lead, you know, late in that game against the Chiefs. They had him on the ropes. They put an inexperienced rookie back there, put the game in his hands. What does he do? He throws a pick six for 100 yards. It was enough for the Chiefs. They weren't able to score on offense, but the defense was getting it done. As far as the Steelers go, just an absolute train wreck right now. Just allowed the most points in for a proud, proud franchise against the Patriots last week, so this is a chance for them to get it turned around.
Oakland Raiders coming off a 42-20 pounding at the hand of the Philadelphia Eagles last week, travel out east to take on another NFC Eastern Division club, the 2-6 New York Giants. Arthur, now consider this. The Cowboys are on the road this week. We're going to talk about the game coming up a little bit later on. They're at the Superdome taking on the Saints. The Cowboys lose and the Giants win at home over the Raiders. The Giants, who started the season 0-6, could be right back in the thick of the NFC East division race.
Yeah, that's, I think, maybe says a little bit more about the NFC East than anything else. But you know what? They have been playing better. I think a revived pass rush has had as much to do with that as anything. Eli Manning has been making smarter decisions. We know there's still a lot of explosive elements on that team. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how Oakland responds as well after the beating they took. Now they have to go cross country. The defense, of course, in shambles right now. The one positive is Terrell Pryor continues to quietly play very well for Oakland. Looks like he could be the answer long term.
Yeah, they put some 500 yards of offense on the board in that blowout loss last week to Philadelphia. It's a rematch of a divisional playoff game from last winter as Seattle travels to Atlanta. This is one of the featured games, or would have been, in the preseason. 8-1 Seahawks come in and take on an Atlanta team that's beat up and 2-6 midway through the campaign.
Yeah, the 8-1 Seahawks, but boy, how they have found ways to make it interesting the past few weeks, coming off their biggest comeback in franchise history against the Buccaneers last week. How they ever managed to let the Buccaneers hang around that long, I'm not quite sure. You know, Seattle has some small issues. They've allowed 200 yards rushing in two straight weeks, so they do have some things they have to get figured out. We talked at the open about Percy Harvin getting a little bit closer to a return, at least. He certainly should be able to give them a boost. And as far as Atlanta, it's really ugly right now. Matt Ryan has two touchdowns versus seven interceptions over the past 2 weeks. They're playing for next season at this point. There's not a lot of things going well in Atlanta.
The Houston Texans were considered a preseason AFC favorite, like the Falcons in the NFC. Their season has fallen on hard times thanks to a six-game losing streak. Texans head to Arizona with a 2-6 record and without their head coach Gary Kubiak, who suffered a mild stroke at halftime of last week's loss to Indianapolis. Arizona coming off a bye week with a 4-4 mark.
Yeah, that was a bizarre, bizarre game for the Texans last week. Of course, they lose their head coach. They also lose a huge lead to Andrew Luck and the Colts. You know, Case Keenum has made things interesting for sure. He has added an explosive element to that passing game that was definitely not there with Matt Schaub. Andre Johnson and Case Keenum has been a prolific pairing over the past few weeks. They are going to face a step up in class as far as the Arizona defense is concerned. They've been doing some things really well. I'm curious as much as anything to see how the bye treated them with regard to getting Larry Fitzgerald back. He's been having the nagging hamstring all season thus far.
An important AFC West battle shapes up in San Diego. 4-4 Chargers, 7-1 Broncos. Denver without head coach John Fox, who underwent that heart procedure last week. And they're coming off their bye week. Chargers led by the third-ranked quarterback in football, Phillip Rivers. Arthur is quietly having a tremendous season, 17 touchdowns, 7 interceptions.
Yeah, he's been wonderful, and you know, I think Mike McCoy deserves a lot of the credit for that. I think he's got Rivers making a lot quicker decisions. I think he's got some new weapons. Keenan Allen has been very, very exciting for the Chargers. He looks like he is a star in the making, so there are some nice elements there. But this is obviously a game they have to have. They had the heartbreaker where they were not able to punch it in down by the goal goal line last week when they went out to Washington. So, you know, if you want to have any chance, you got to play well in the division. Obviously, this is one of the juggernauts in the AFC West. You got the Broncos, who, of course, are going to be without John Fox, but have pretty much everything else going, at least on offense, and they should be able to challenge that San Diego defense that's had more than its share of struggles this season.
Two franchises who have had more than their share of distraction and controversy this season finished the weekend of football in the Monday night spotlight. The Miami Dolphins 4-4, coming off a Thursday night victory over Cincinnati. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers winless at 0-8, but nearly pulled off the upset of the year as they fell in Seattle to the Seahawks in overtime last week.
Boy, it's going to be funny to see how ESPN is able to sugarcoat polish this one. This is going to be some ugly football between two dysfunctional organizations, as you mentioned. You know, it's funny, all the dysfunction off the field has kind of clouded a big win for the Dolphins that we talked about a little bit over the Bengals last Thursday. We'll see if they're able to keep some things going and try and, you know, get past all those distractions off the field. As far as Tampa, I think the real question is, are those players still playing for Greg Schiano? I think there are some who wonder. There's so much more talent than that win-loss record indicates, and, you know, not a lot of things going great. They've got Mike Glennon throwing the ball way too much, don't have Doug Martin, so they're going to have to rely on the defense if they're going to get anything going.
Coming up, we start breaking down the big games this weekend when Pro Football Weekly continues. Welcome back to this regular season edition of Pro Football Weekly, and with us in studio this week is Arthur Arkush, NFC North reporter for USA Today Sports Weekly, and we're joined by Eric Edholm from Shutdown Corner on Yahoo Sports. All right, guys, let's start with Cincinnati at Baltimore. This is the first of two meetings between these AFC North Division rivals. 6-3 Bengals, 3-5 Ravens. Ravens have lost three in a row and can ill afford to fall any farther behind the division leaders. The Bengals coming off a disappointing and highly unusual overtime loss on a safety at Miami a week ago Thursday night. That snapped an impressive four-game winning streak that vaulted them to the top of the division, Arthur.
Yeah, you know, at the top you mentioned this is the first of two meetings, and boy, is that good news for the Ravens, who are really in must-win mode, obviously. The fact that they are still looking up at the Bengals with both games to play is encouraging. But I'll tell you what, the Ravens were coming off the bye last week. You expected them to hopefully figure some things out, especially that run game. Instead, it continued to be a disaster. They cannot get anything going whatsoever, making matters worse. Joe Flacco was really off from the outset in that upset loss to the Browns, and things aren't going very well in Baltimore right now, Eric.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've seen that offensive line, and that's a group that needs to improve. The receivers have been hit hard by injury, the tight ends, so you understand that. But the thing that kind of shocks me is Ray Rice. I mean, this is a guy who was able to create when things weren't going well, and I think that's what's missing right now. He's not making that first guy miss. The jump cut is just gone from his arsenal. He's not a factor as a receiver, at least not to the level he was last season. I mean, 4th-and-29 feels like 2 years ago at this point. So getting him going is hugely important. And if you're the Bengals defense, you sell out to stopping him no matter what, because nobody else really scares you. Even, you know, even without Geno Atkins, I think they've got a great chance to shut him down.
Yeah, you know, this Bengals team in that division, guys, and Eric, I'll start with you on this, that's the most solid team, offense, defense, special teams in the division, isn't it, Cincinnati?
Absolutely. And I thought so when, you know, when you look at their draft, they took some really great choices in my mind, but they were all reserves. So it spoke to the depth of this team. I mean, they're kind of ordinary at linebacker. They've been a little beat up front on both lines. Secondary to me is not a great group, but everything else just reads solid. And I think that's ultimately why they're going to win the division. They're going to hold off the Cleveland Browns or the Bengals or anybody else, Steelers. So yeah, their goal is obviously higher than that, but it's been taking a big hit with the Atkins injury.
Cincinnati, Baltimore in one of the featured games this week in the NFL. Arthur, let's start with Dallas and New Orleans, our next game in the NFC. This is a very attractive matchup in the Superdome. Division leaders colliding, 5-4 Cowboys. They lead the East. Meanwhile, 6-2 New Orleans leads the South. Dallas coming in off a tough win at home over Minnesota. The Saints were beaten in the Meadowlands by the Jets last week. Sidebar in this game, guys, it's former Dallas defense coordinator Rob Ryan now directing the Saints defense against his old team.
Yeah, you know what? And he's hoping that he's going to fare better in his old team than he has against his brother, obviously, the Saints coming off the, you know, the big upset loss. It's going to be a fascinating situation for sure. I thought there were some kind of funky things going on in that game for New Orleans, some interesting calls late. As far as Dallas go, you know, no one really wanted to talk about it. They were coming off 2 weeks ago, the ridiculous loss against the Lions. So what did they do last week against the Vikings? They get a fourth quarter comeback, a final drive win out of Tony Romo. It seems like no one's really talking about it all that much, though. So you got explosive offense, two explosive offenses really going against each other. One thing to keep in mind is that we're hearing reports Dez Bryant may have a back issue that he's dealing with. We know that the Cowboys can ill afford to not have Dez Bryant at less than 100%, Eric.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Bryant injury concerns me. You know, practice on a limited basis. You know, they're trying to figure out what the extent of the injury is. Obviously, that's something that is going to hold them back. But you look at the other side, a guy who's been held back by injury not an inch has been Jimmy Graham. I mean, the fact that he's playing through this foot injury, you know, the fact that he's been so ultra productive, the fact that the Cowboys look at him as something like a wide receiver tells you just how good he is and how important he is to the Saints team. I don't see anybody on that Cowboys defense being able to match up. I know DeMarcus Ware is expected to play first time in three games, but unless he and Jason Hatcher go absolutely crazy on that defensive line, they've got a problem stopping the Saints offense, no question in my mind.
All right, guys, Dallas at New Orleans, Cincinnati at Baltimore, two featured games in the NFL this weekend. We'll have more breakdowns of NFL games this weekend when we return to Pro Football Weekly. We continue with this Week 10 edition of Pro Football Weekly. Along with Arthur Arkush of USA Today and Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports, I'm Wayne Larrabee. Couple of big games involving NFC North Division teams. Let's start with Detroit at Chicago. Detroit coming off a bye week. It's a huge divisional matchup involving two of the top three clubs in the division. There's a three-way tie at the top, and the Lions and Bears are going to break part of that logjam, or one would figure, this weekend. Chicago coming off a big Monday night win in Green Bay, and as I said, the Lions should be well rested off their bye week. Arthur?
Yeah, just a huge win for the Bears Monday night, their first one in Lambeau Field in 6 years, and making things even better for them. They come into practice this week, and it looks like they're going to get Jay Cutler back. As well as Josh McCown played, they are going to have their leader and their franchise quarterback, you know, back in the fold, so that can only help things. This is a really, really interesting matchup. You'll remember back to the first meeting in Detroit, handled the Bears. It was 40-32 final, but it really wasn't as close as the score suggested. Reggie Bush went off, and the Bears had four turnovers that day, so you're not going to win a lot of games like that, obviously. But as far as Detroit goes, you know, I wonder, you like the mid-season bye that they did have, but I do have to sort of wonder, you had kind of Matt Stafford's coming of age and one of the biggest wins by any team in the first half of the season right before the bye. You know, it'll be interesting to see if they can pick up where they left off after so much time down there.
Yeah, and I think some of the time off probably helped Calvin Johnson heal a little bit. It may help Bill Bentley heal. And, you know, this is a secondary that I think needs all hands on deck, not just because of who they're playing and not just because the Bears have thrown the ball well, whether it's Cutler or Josh McCown. But I just think that there's a huge drop off in that secondary if Bentley's not out there. You know, Darius Slay has given up some plays. He's still a rookie. He's still learning from guys like Rasheen Mathis. So, you know, there is a concern back there. And they've got to get that pass rush cranked up just a little bit more. I mean, I feel like it's a little inconsistent on some of the 5- and 7-step drops that at some point the Bears are going to make. It's a really intriguing matchup. And I think it's going to play out a little differently on the Bears field, even though, you know, we could see a lot of points again.
You know, one of the aspects of the game that I look at, and I'm always surprised, Detroit, I thought guys would be better against the run with the people they have in their defensive front seven, but they're really not a great run defense by any stretch of the imagination.
You know, there's going to be an opportunity there for the Bears. Obviously, Matt Forte had a big game. It was kind of his first real breakout performance. The Bears' running game had been a little bit inconsistent. So, yeah, I do tend to agree with you. Just not quite enough discipline for Detroit up front. But it'll be interesting to see if they can get that turned around. And then just quickly, one other aspect of that last game. I mentioned the four turnovers. That is because the Detroit pass rush definitely did, you know, have a big impact in that game. Kyle Long against Ndamukong Suh, their first meetup. Clearly, the advantage went to Suh. So I'll be interested to see how long response to that. Detroit actually has allowed Matt Stafford to be sacked less than any quarterback in the NFL, and you got the Bears who finally turned up the pass rush after it being pretty much non-existent for the first 8 games.
All right, guys, the other leader in the NFC North, the Green Bay Packers at 5-3, are learning what life is like without either Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers starting at quarterback, and they're coming off a loss to the aforementioned Bears Monday night. 5-3 Pack take on a record-setting quarterback Nick Foles and the 4-5 Philadelphia Eagles. Now, Eric, I want to ask you about the Eagles. Either they're real good or they're real bad. But really, if you look at Nick Foles and break down his season, and he's missed a couple of games with injuries, one a concussion and the other another injury, but the fact is he's had three of his four starts have been outstanding and none better than last week. Perfect quarterback rating and seven touchdown passes in a blowout win at Oakland.
Yeah, I think everybody looked at that first start and everybody said, okay, this is his opportunity. You know, this is going to be where he shines. And that was the one he failed against the Giants. And boy, I mean, he was so bad in that game. It seems to be like that little thing that sticks in everybody's mind. Yeah, he threw seven touchdowns, but there was that horrible game. I mean, we got to almost put that past us a little bit. He was great in relief of Michael Vick. He just seemed to have a little bit more confidence and fluidity running the offense. And last week was just off the charts. So, you know, his confidence has been soaring. Now, they have been so much better a road team than a home team. And that's just something that kind of, you know, makes you scratch your head a little bit. But consistency has been a problem all season long for this team. Right when you think they're turning the corner, they have a defensive lapse. The offensive line can't block, and the quarterbacks are throwing picks. So, you know, trying to predict what this team is going to do on a weekly basis is somebody else's job besides mine.
You know, as far as the Packers go, I think that, you know, Seneca Wallace's struggles, obviously Aaron Rodgers going down was the story from that loss Monday night. But what it really did, in addition, is it overshadowed just the terrible defense that the Packers played. And I think that has to be a real big concern with, you know, obviously with such an explosive Eagles offense coming in. I just saw so much bad tackling out of the second and third levels. And when you got a dangerous running back like LeSean McCoy coming in, you're going to have to get that corrected in a hurry. As far as Seneca Wallace goes, you know, I do think a week of preparation is going to help, but we were just talking off the air. The key for them is going to be getting into manageable situations, second and third down, putting themselves in a position to move the chains. They were 1 of 9 on third down against the Bears. That's obviously not going to cut it.
Yeah, Arthur, they can't get behind the chains, that's for sure. They will get Clay Matthews back on that defense this week in Green Bay. Stay tuned. We've got the headliner coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. The headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. The red-hot Carolina Panthers, winners of four in a row, head to San Francisco to meet a 49ers squad that's won five straight after a 1-2 start. Former teammates Ron Rivera and Jim Harbaugh from their days as players in the Bears organization match up on the sidelines, and also on the field, a great matchup of mobile quarterbacks, athletic quarterbacks, big play quarterbacks, Cam Newton and Colin Kaepernick. Newton leading that Carolina team. Arthur, when you look at Carolina, this is a team at this time of the stage of the season, I don't know if you really want to tangle with these guys.
No, you mentioned at the top how both teams are red hot, and not only are they red hot winning 4 and 5 straight respectively, but they are blowing opponents out right now. It's been really, it's been pretty dominant for both clubs with Carolina. You know, obviously you said Cam Newton playing the best football of his career. If you think about it, it really dates all the way back to the second half of last season. He's been like a different person. He just seems to be taking what's there for him rather than taking all the chances. And Ron Rivera is coaching with a ton of confidence right now. You talk about, you know, old friends Harbaugh and Rivera. Obviously, their starts in the NFL have been pretty much polar opposites. But Rivera seems to have something going right now. And one interesting stat: there's a bunch of different directions you can go with this game, but I think one that's kind of telling with regard to the Panthers' offense and how it's finally starting to click and how it's a more confident bunch. Rivera is 5 for 6 going for it on 4th and 1 this season, so he has shown that he has the utmost confidence in Cam Newton and that offense. And I think it helps when you got the type of dominant defense that they've had, led by Luke Kuechly and Star Latulé. And I think those are, you know, fun young stars that are really going to have to show up big against San Francisco's smash mouth identity.
Well, Carolina has D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart healthy now. That's a 1-2 running back combination not many teams have. They're 8th in the league in running the football. San Francisco's rush defense, Arthur, not as good as it has been in recent years. 12th overall, 10th in yards per play. That's not quite the edge San Francisco's played on in the past, but this is still a good team that is going to get Aldon Smith back at linebacker. Not sure how much he'll be able to play.
Yeah, well, it remains to be seen. Vic Fangio said he does expect that Alden's going to see some time on the field, and let's face it, he's going to make a big difference. That's a good defense, but one that is absolutely more dangerous with Aldon Smith rushing the passer. So that'll be a fascinating thing to keep an eye on. You know, as far as Colin Kaepernick, we talked a little bit about Cam Newton, but Kaepernick has really sort of settled down too. I think as he has become more involved as a runner in that offense, they've seen things get going. I believe they have the number one rush offense in the NFL right now. Frank Gore has been on a roll. So as I mentioned, the Panthers rebuilt in the offseason to be more stout up front. Both Latutule, Kawan Short, these guys are definitely going to loom large in this matchup, and it should be a really exciting one to watch.
You know, and Arthur, you bring up a great point, because Buffalo got 103 yards, C.J. Spiller, on the Panthers in Week 2, and since then, Carolina has not allowed more than 62 yards to a running back in six games since then. As you mentioned, San Francisco number one in running the football. That's a combination of Gore and Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick, second leading rusher for San Francisco, 49 running attempts, a six-yard average. They are beginning to find their chops, I think, this season with that combination. I thought earlier in the year people were taking that read option stuff away from them. Kaepernick was more in the pocket. They're getting him outside the pocket a little bit more, and that's where he's really dynamic and threatens the defense, both with his arm, which is considerable, and with his legs, which are very quick.
Yeah, no doubt about it. One thing we have not mentioned, we talked about Kaepernick as a runner. He is going to have some reinforcements on the way sooner than later. I believe Mario Manningham, as soon as this week, we know that Anquan Boldin has really been the singular threat in the receiving corps. So getting Manningham back and then eventually Michael Crabtree, we're going to see that offense become a little bit more balanced. I think it's only going to make San Francisco more dangerous. I think in Carolina, that's been one of the reasons for their success as well. I think the Cam's been a little less reliant on Steve Smith and Greg Olsen. He's found a way to, you know, make playmakers out of Ted Ginn and Brandon LaFell. You mentioned the loaded backfield. Mike Tolbert, they've even been getting really nice contributions from. They've been really strong up front. So, look, this is going to be a matchup of strength versus strength. These are two powerful football teams, and it's going to be whoever can impose their will on the other one.
And two teams that started the season slow but are red hot down the stretch. We'll be back with the Publisher's Pen next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Here's this week's Publisher's 10 with Hub Arkish. Hub?
Wayne, it's hard to talk about anything but the goings-on with the Miami Dolphins this week. It has been a huge story that has crossed the borders of sports and ended up on the front page of every paper and every newscast in the country. And I want to come back to what we were talking about and the way we hear it. When I first heard reports of this, I was outraged that such a culture could exist in the Dolphins locker room. The thing that upset me the most was I kept saying to myself and anybody else who would listen, where were Martin's teammates in this? You want to tell me there wasn't one guy on the offensive line who would stand up for him? How could this have come to this? Well, we all need to wait and get all the facts, because as I have uncovered facts, what I have discovered is that most of his teammates have said, we thought Martin and Incognito were best friends, that Martin was complicit in all this, that he was taking these voicemails and these texts and sharing them with us and laughing about them. And in fact, we've now found out that some of the content of those voicemails hasn't been revealed, content that actually changes the tenor and the tone. So there is no excuse for bullying in the workplace, in the schoolyard, in our neighborhood. We all know that. But was this bullying, or was this a case of a young man keeping everything in himself and not letting anybody around him know there was a problem, and then suddenly turning on all of them without giving them any warning? We don't know yet. We're going to find out. Let's wait before we decide the right and the wrong of this.
Well said, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Randy Meyer is the producer-engineer of Pro Football Weekly. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkish, Arthur Arkish, and Eric Edholm, this is Wayne Larrabee. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.